The specialists are back with our Traders Season 2, Episode 5 recap. Will's doing this from a room this time rather than the airport, which is nice. Welcome, Will. Welcome back.
I missed the airport, though. I think the airport was fun.
It was good. We got a couple people some fame that didn't know that they were about to become famous. So good for them. But we're doing this Friday morning instead of Thursday night. And here we are breaking down everything that just went on. Dan Gieseling seems like he's in a little bit of trouble. And before we
It feels like he is in a lot of trouble, like a lot. Like, I don't know how he survives next week.
I think he might be doomed. Now, here's my question to you. And I'm going to bring this up off the bat because I know that there's going to be people in the chat or the comments or anything like that who are going to say stuff. So I want to ask you how you feel about it. Is what they show in the preview for next week fair game to discuss openly on this podcast or no?
I think it is, but if you're someone who didn't watch the preview and wants to remain completely unspoiled, which I think is fair, the preview heavily suggests the outcome of the preview pretty much spoils it. Yes. I think it is fair game. I think what we do is we can talk about the episode and then when we get to the preview and hey, maybe it pops up early, but I think we can spend probably at least 10 to 15 minutes breaking down what we saw. And then, you know, as we're projecting forward into next week, obviously the preview becomes more paramount and we will need to discuss it. So I think that's probably the fairest way to go about it.
So should we give everybody a good 25 minutes where we don't discuss the preview and then kind of like say at the 25 minute mark, it's fair game for us to start talking about the preview? This way people who want to get out can get out.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know if it will be rigid. I think once we kind of talk our way through, maybe that will come up earlier. Maybe it will come up later. But once it comes up, we're going to have to talk about it. So
yeah. So I'm going to try to keep the conversation on last night's episode for 25 minutes. That's my goal, to get people listening.
That's the goal, and it's okay. Yeah. It's okay if we don't hit that goal.
And if we're going to break that truce earlier, you will be notified. So anyway, so last night's episode, we had people doing bird calls. We had the traders doing trader stuff. We had Janelle playing so aggressively that why wouldn't you put a target on your back? We had the introduction of Kate from Below Deck, who is in season one. And we had pretty much Pete maybe be the smartest player of all time and correctly call out two of the traders, even though nobody's believing him. We also had Sandra say, F you, bitch, to Janelle. And we had Janelle say, F you, you're a traitor. I love that stuff. Somebody had tweeted the mother off. We didn't know we were actually going to get. And that was just really funny to me.
That was great.
What did you think about last night's episode?
I loved it. I think we're in the middle of a very strong, strong season of the traitors. The cast is delivering. The suspense is there. I think this is probably the best challenge the show has ever done.
I hated it so much. Why is it the best? Tell me. Explain it to me from like a challenge perspective. Because to me, watching, I was like, this is pure cheese ball. I don't get it.
I think there's a few things that it did right. One thing is the way they did the shields and that the shields weren't public information. I think right off the bat, that's just great. And hey, maybe you don't like bird calls, but the fact this was the challenge that brought that kind of idea mechanic to the forefront of the show, like big kudos to this bird call challenge. We always talk about the faithful not being armed with any information or tools or anything to find the traitors. And I mean, you look, we're getting down to it now because we eliminate two people at a time. And then we had Deontay quit. So like we are really kind of like getting down to it. And we're only five episodes in. And obviously Kate comes in, but to give the faithful a tool here, and then the way that Peter was able to use it, and we don't know if it worked out or not, that's what I like to see. And so they put shields in the game. It's not public. I think the traders messed up by not sending anybody out into the field because Dan, Sandra, and Parv all stay back. I think, you know, when they're divvying up teams, I think those three, they need to look at each other. Why did I say Sandra?
I don't know. It's all good. People were going to crap on you in the comments. I didn't want to say anything.
No, it's fine. I realized my mistake because Sandra was running around. It's early, Phil. It's like 7:30 on the West Coast. I just woke up. I got
it to yourself, man.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. That Phaedra, Dan, or Parv should have gone out there. They should have looked at each other and figured it out. So something like this couldn't happen. Because then they are You know, they're stuck in the house. The shields are out there. And a lot of times at the end of these challenges, we have Alan be like, Janelle went after a shield. How selfish. You know, like they really highlight it. And here, I think, I don't know. I think Peter probably comes up with this plan. He starts whispering. I think the show is probably like, oh, wow, let's not spoil this. Let's not have Alan do a review of the challenge. I don't know if this was planned by the production, that they wanted something like this to happen, because usually they out the person right away. Mm-hmm. And I think it's great for the show that they realize, wow, that the faithful are fighting back and figuring out ways. So I, big fan on that front. And then I love the bird call thing, dude. I think it's awesome. Like, I think it's so much fun to have people running around making silly noises. Like, first they have to call the birds. Maybe that's a little bit lame, but they hear the bird call. Then you have to walkie the bird call over. And yes, is it super, super easy? Yes. But I thought the little statue of the birds, they looked really good. You have the button that's playing the noise. Like, I think they did a challenge like this last season with like the organ thing or the bells or something, and it was coming from the church.
Yep.
And I was watching that challenge last year. I'm like, that's really fun, like an audio type challenge. I think it's a really fun concept. It just didn't mean anything last season, but here it meant a whole lot, as I just spelled out. So big kudos to the challenge. I think it's like ridiculous and fun, and when you can do that, I'm in for it. So
yeah, I guess the bones of the challenge I thought were stupid, just of like doing bird calls and stuff. But I do agree with you about the shield thing. This is a huge game development, right? And like when we're doing our Patreon content for Every Season Matters, where we're talking about the game evolution of Survivor, we started off with Borneo. We're going to be doing Australia in the month of February. And like, you start to see how the game changed even from one season to the next. And then obviously season three is when you get a twist, and that's what happens. We're kind of seeing that with the Traitors now. And I know that the Traitors US isn't the only version of this show. I know that people have been commenting in the chats and on the videos, and we appreciate that, where they're saying, go watch Australia, go watch UK, go watch all this other stuff. So I don't know exactly what's going on in those seasons. However, to see the evolution of gameplay from one season to the next is great. And to see the evolution of the production that they're putting behind it is great. The fact that the shields weren't public knowledge, and that people didn't even know that it was necessarily at the walled garden. The only people who knew it was at the walled garden were the people who were doing the bird calls, so that the people in the house couldn't know that that was right there and that that was going to happen is great. I think that's huge, because it actually gives the faithful a fighting chance, and we get to see the faithful strategize. It feels like season one of this show is all about the traitors strategizing and the faithful existing. And right now the faithful are getting to play the game, because what happens? Pete and Bergie come up with a plan. I mean, Pete comes up with a plan, really. Bergie just is kind of like by proxy, he's involved. But Pete comes up with this plan to say, I'm going to tell three people who I am not trustworthy of, who I do not believe in, that I have it. And then that means that they're going to put their vote on one of the other people that were running around if they go that route. Why Dan, Parv, and Phaedra are going to go with one of the people who is out there in the field in the first place, I don't know. I think they should just safely go with somebody who is in the house, because
they could go for John, but it's like, you know, John's like a nothing.
John's such a nothing burger. Yeah, I don't think they would do that with John. So it's very, very interesting, I think, the way that this played out. And I'm definitely invested in that element of it. And Dan seems like he's getting played by it. It seems like Dan fell for it. Dan's playing too quiet. It's not working. People are suspicious of him. It seems like it's biting him in the ass. What do you think about the fact that he just won't throw out a name at this point?
Yeah, it's so bizarre, because we saw in the first three batch of episodes, he caught a lot of heat. And that third episode, you're like, wow, they could get Dan here, because he really isn't playing that hard as a faithful. And then it kind of just goes away. We talked about this last week on the podcast. Like, what did Dan do to just like get out of everyone's radar? We saw Larsa looking at the paintings. It was like, it's Dan or CT. CT, it has to be you, even though we had so much suspicion on Dan earlier. And then I think you had said, like, I think he just kind of slipped back under the radar. And great. But that's kind of what he was called out for, was being mm-hmm. too under the radar and not giving out names. I think Parv did a great job last week at, you know, she really went on the aggressive to get Larsa out, did the housewives thing. So I think people are like, okay, Parv is actually attempting to like out somebody. So it's tough, because then if you go full Janelle, it's like, yeah, then you're done. And when Janelle starts tossing out names, like she threw three people, like she's like, it's Dan, it's Sandra, and it's CT, like those are the three traitors. Like, great, you're playing really hard. but you also just piss three people off. Like, they're going to vote for you now. Mm-hmm. So we talked about this. You can't be super aggressive like Larsa or Janelle, or you go home, but you can't also not toss out any names. And honestly, I think Dan here, he has to toss out the name of a traitor, because if you're Dan and you keep saying, like, I don't want to say a name until I'm 100%. And maybe this is his strategy. Like, when I'm really against the wall, I'm just going to be like, hey, it's Phaedra. Like, I've been watching this, and we see it in the previews. Like, I've been watching one person very closely, because if Dan is wrong, then they're just going to be like, all right, next time we'll just vote out Dan. And there's just not that many people left. Like, and they keep saying, like, a man has to be a traitor. So I think CT or Dan is like high for everybody, but CT has got to be like, he kind of knows it has to be Dan.
Yeah. So let's jump over to the comments here and let me know if my internet's okay. I'm getting like a connection symbol at the top. So if I cut out, just
face is freezing at some points.
But my audio is fine, right?
It's been, well, I've been talking mostly because, you know, I have the greatest opinions.
Yeah.
Thoughts,
but so when I do talk,
don't really worry about it.
I sound okay. Mm-hmm. Ryan 51 says Dan is 100% going to throw a traitor's name out next week, which Will, you talked about. And we'll get more into that in the 25-minute mark, because I'd rather not talk about that right here. But I think, you know, you just brought up that point. And Ryan Chan says Dan played this horribly. He was lucky Janelle played it worse. The fact she also accused CT and Sandra sealed her fate. Because the problem with what Janelle did is, if you call out three names, you're not going to get all three. You're just not. Like, the odds of you getting all three are very low. So you're going to piss off a faithful who knows they're a faithful, who is now going to be pushing really hard against you. And that's what we saw with Sandra, where Sandra was just like, screw you, go home. Right. I mean, that's what she does. And and she was not happy with this. And Janelle, if she doesn't call out Sandra, might still be in the game, because Dan was on enough people's radars.
Well, yeah. And calling out CT also, I think you have to go after one person. And I could see the argument. Well, if you're just going after one person, your chances are low of finding a traitor. If you cast a wider net, you're more likely to get one. But like you just said, you're going to piss off the faithful. And CT was really on to Dan, like really on to Dan this entire episode. And then he throws a vote at Janelle because Janelle accused him. Like, and I don't even think that CT thought Janelle was a traitor. It's more like, hey, screw you. Like, I can't have you here throwing my name out. So you can go home.
Well, and the interesting dynamic about this show is that there is a murder and there's a banishment. So if Janelle is sitting there throwing CT's name out, CT probably won't get murdered in that circumstance, right? Because like the traders would be like, great, CT's getting a lot of heat, but CT could be banished. And you don't get the money unless you're sitting there at the end and you've eliminated the traitor. So if you're CT, if somebody's throwing your name out there, even if you're a faithful like he is, it's like, get out of here, because if they banish me, then I don't get the money. So like, if you're going to keep bringing my name up and keep putting that doubt in people's minds, I don't want you here. And I understand, like, I don't think, you know, we talk about all the time, if you start going after somebody who's bringing your name up, are you actually pretty much accusing yourself and incriminating yourself? I don't think anybody was thinking that way with Janelle, because Janelle was being so ridiculously aggressive with these players. And I know that she's a Big Brother winner, right? I never watched Big Brother, but she's a Big Brother winner, I believe.
Is she a winner? I don't know. I thought she was just,
like, I don't know. I know she was on our Amazing Casuals. We talked about her from the Amazing Casuals.
I don't think she's won. That would be my guess. But
let me see. She is the winner of Big Brother 12. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so she did. She won. So Janelle's a Big Brother winner. So maybe this works for her on Big Brother the same way Dan's strategy works for him on Big Brother. But in this type of game, you have to play a better middle ground. And we are seeing Parvati do that really well, because that's how Parvati played Survivor. Parvati always played in the middle. She was with the women in Micronesia. She was with the women in Micronesia, but she was talking to James and talking to Jason and talking to Eric. And like, she was doing what she had to do in that season. Same thing in Cook Island. She is working with her original, you know, I hate to be like this, but it's Cook Islands, her white people alliance. But then she's also talking to Yule and Ozzy and Nate and getting in with them to make that work. And that's why she gets as far in the game as she did. She gets that middle ground thing. Sandra gets that middle ground thing. It seems like the Big Brother people, they're playing so polarizing that it's not working.
Yeah. And that might be the nature of the format, where you go to tribal council and everybody is at risk of going home except the person with immunity. Whereas Big Brother, it's like they nominate two people and it's between one or two people. So you can kind of go after your targets, and you're not vulnerable every time there's a vote. Like, obviously you're vulnerable to be nominated, but once you get nominated, you have your chances to get off and blah, blah, blah. But it could be that. It could be a nature of horror. I don't watch enough Big Brother, but that's why you might see different strategies where Survivor is like,
I don't know where I saw that.
Yeah, I didn't think so. That was surprising to me. I feel like we would have like known that. I think it would have come up in the trader so far because they have highlighted like she was Janelle was. We should have known just by Janelle being like, "You won, Big Brother, Dan." And, like he could have been like, "Janelle, so did you?" But
yeah, it's
clearly,
true.
Clearly, she didn't. So I don't know. It's hard to talk about this. I know we're 15 minutes in. What other 10 minutes do you want to spend on? Because we do get down to like the ending here. And what Peacock has shown us. Do you think Peacock's tricking us? Do we really feel like we can fully trust it?
Let's talk about that in 10 minutes.
Okay.
Let's talk about that in 10 minutes. Okay. I want to wait 10 minutes. I want to talk about two other things that we can get in easily in these 10 minutes, and then we can do this. So Kate coming back.
Honestly, this is something I had like seen online that was going to happen, and I had completely forgotten about it while watching the episode. I was not being like, when's Kate coming back? It's something I just completely forgot about. And then when she comes back, I honestly, like, I thought, wait, is that someone from this season that's like coming back? Like, I barely remember from the first season. I don't watch Below Deck. So to me, kind of felt like a nothing burger. But when she did come back, she is snarky. Her confessionals were great. Season one, I just breezed through like just on a binge. And I didn't super get invested in all the people that weren't named Sari, basically. So, and we had, you know, the mix, it was tough because you had the mix of not reality and reality, but if you didn't watch the reality shows that those people came from, they kind of all blended together. So it was like, you knew the people, you didn't, at least here, the people I don't know, I know that they're famous from their show, where that wasn't the case in the first season. So, Kate seems like she's a big personality. I don't remember her all that much. And I imagine this is just because Deontay quit, right? They're just getting that number back for the faithful.
You think that's what it was? And they pretty much called people from season one and were like, who would be interested? And they started with like who they thought was most popular or just who would be most polarizing. So they landed on Kate.
Yeah. I think they want like a big character, a big personality, someone who was a reality star. Like it'd be weird if you brought back like one of the new people, like the randos from season one. So you definitely want to go that route. And yeah, she's clearly, you know, mixing
it up. I almost think it would have been funny. And I know that, I mean, it seems like the people who played with Sari are just bitter babies at this point. I know Ari was posting about how like disgusting Sari played. It's like, dude, she played as a traitor. What do you want? You got duped, bro. And Quentin and Andy also weren't happy. I do think it might have been fun though if it was Quentin or Andy, where it was like somebody you bring back who
it's like a redemption for them.
So duped in that first season, and they come back and they're coming in being like, look, I got burned the first time. This is what I'm gonna do. Because now the traders can kind of be like, hey, look, people from season one can be personalities. Personally, I don't say this much on the podcast, but this is one instance where I really don't care. I do not like Kate at all. I think Kate did not want to be there in season one. I feel like she was miserable the entire time. I feel like she was just causing chaos to cause chaos because she was just bitter about something that happened. I'm really disappointed they brought her back. I'm not disappointed they brought somebody in to replace the Deontay number. But for me, Kate is not who I wanted to see. I did not find her fun to watch on season one. I just thought that she was super, super obnoxious. Look, that might be great for reality TV shows. I'm sure on Below Deck, she's a lot of fun because she is that personality. But when I don't watch those types of reality TV shows. The types of reality TV shows I watch, I want to have like reasonable villains and reasonable, like kind of obnoxious people. To me, Kate's just not that. So look, Kate, to each their own. But for me, I'm not a big Kate fan, and I'm not excited that she's on this season.
Honestly, when you were about to ask this question, we were moving on to this topic, I kind of forgot that she even joined. Like, I don't know.
Well, she's going to be a big factor in the future game. I mean, she joined at the round table tonight and she got to place a vote. That's insane.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind that part of it because there are still a lot of people who are voting. How many people do we have left total?
There are 13, right? Because 7 people have been voted out. Deontay quit. That drops it down to 8. And no, so that drops down to 8 and then Kate's back in. So it's 14. There's 14.
Okay.
Is it 14 or 13? I can't remember.
I don't know. It was watching this episode, you know, we start with breakfast and I'm like, man, they're really, when the people start flowing in and they're like, all right, it's coming down to this. I was like, wait, that's it? Like there are just so few people left. And that's a tough part about being a trader, is that if you are successful, like you almost have, you like if there's three, like, there's not enough other targets to deflect to. Like, they're running out of other targets. And like I said earlier, if you deflect successfully and one of those targets goes home, then you're still kind of like shit out of luck, because mm-hmm. it's not like they got their prize. Like, you honestly need to throw out someone, you know. You need to, like, Dad needs to basically throw out Parv or Phaedra, because there's not really another avenue for him to go down.
And Willie D says there's another rumored person to join the show. I mean, do you like the idea of shows adding in people late after everything's settled, or you think that's kind of a cop out?
I think it totally depends on the show. Like on Survivor, I don't think that's fair, because it's like the survival aspect and not eating. Like, it's hard to like level that playing field. Like if I come in and join you on day 12 and I'm like, I've been eating and stuff, that just feels...
The outcast had the same as you. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That feels super unfair. But on shows like this, as long as it's done early on, how many episodes total are we working with here? Is this a 10 episode or a 13 episode or like a 12 or...
I'm not 100% sure.
What was season one?
What was season one? Let's see. The Traitor season one. I think it was 10.
And I know the Circle, they do this all the time where they...
Traitor season one was 10.
Yeah. 10. That's about right. The Circle does this where they bring in people mid-season, like basically continuously, almost up to like the episode before the finale. They just keep bringing people in. And sometimes that feels really unfair, because often... the original people group up an alliance and then they just vote the new people out as they come in. It doesn't happen always that way. It's kind of like a circle pagonging. I don't know if there's a better phrase for it in the circle community, but I do remember watching a season of the Circle where like the winner came in like two episodes before the finale. Like, they came in so late and did manage to win. So that kind of settles that.
It's
that
like, when wrestling used to do, I don't know if they still do it this way, but when they used to do the Royal Rumbles, it used to be like these two wrestlers start it and then people will come in later and it'll be like, you know, obviously if you're the first person in the ring, you're not going to last until the very end. They're going to have it be somebody who's a little bit later in. That's kind of what this feels like to me, where it's like, well, yeah, no shit. It's easier if you come in later. Like, Kate's coming in. She couldn't have been murdered by now. Personally, I think it would be brilliant if they just murdered Kate, because that gives the faithful nothing if you murder Kate.
That is probably the best way to do it. It's just like, and I'm sure people are trying to figure out, why is Kate here? Like, what is going on? And they could be like, you know, Deontay quit. Like, that's, if I'm playing this game, I'm like trying to think of why she's here. And then you're like, okay, well, Deontay, she's replacing Deontay. Deontay was clearly a faithful. They revealed to us that he was a faithful. You didn't even have to, you know, posture on it. And so you're just saying, okay, well, then she's faithful. So yeah, if I'm the Traitors and she doesn't have a connection or allies yet, I know she comes from a Bravo show and we've talked about like a Bravo alliance potentially, but I would just get rid of her. I think that is absolutely a great move. She wasn't in the challenge. She wasn't inside the house or outside the house. So it's like, she's kind of the perfect person. I wouldn't be surprised though, if they gave her like a one night immunity and they just didn't tell us.
Yeah,
that does feel...
She flew all the way to Scotland just to get eliminated and fly all the way back.
Yeah. And like, they introduced her so late, like at the round table, and then they're making it almost just like one of these tribe swap idols or like
edge. She's Matt Elrod, dude. That's what I wanted.
Yeah.
I wanted her to be Matt Elrod out of the game. That'd be perfect. Where's
they figured that out, where they give these people, when they come back, they give them like some sort of protection for one vote. Like when Stephanie went over to the, whatever that, why am I blanking on the name?
No, she didn't. Are you talking about in Palau?
Didn't she get one?
No.
No?
She didn't.
It's
the ones who did, Burton and Lil did back in Pearl Islands.
They had that like one free pass.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I wouldn't, I think they probably gave something to Kate, because that would suck. Bring her all the way out. Her first scene is the round. It's almost like her flight just got in. Get her pregame interview, get her sitting in the chair. Like, let's go. Let's just get her in. It's like, why wouldn't you introduce her at breakfast? I don't understand.
And this is a show that takes place over a very short amount of time. So if Deontay really was eliminated and quit, and they said, okay, we need to bring somebody in to make up for that, because people are saying Dr. Will is who they're thinking is going to come in, but might not be a player. But if they're thinking we need to replace Deontay, maybe only 4 days have passed, 3 days have passed since Deontay left. To call Kate, get Kate on the phone, get her out there. I mean, you're talking international travel.
I don't think it's 3 or 4 days. I think it's like 2 days, right?
Yeah,
we only had 2 nights. So I think it was like And sometimes, a lot of times with these shows, you have alternates that are like ready to go. And maybe this was the plan the whole time. I mean, to get someone out in 2 to 3 days, that seems like really unrealistic in terms of all the checks that they have, like a cast member has to go through. Obviously, it's a little easier if they like were just on, you know, on season one. So it's like you have all those checks. But if this was the plan, it doesn't that feel weird? Like we're going to bring Kate back at, you know, the very tail end of episode 5. Does that mm-hmm. feel like what rationale is that?
People seem to think it's the plan in the chat. I mean, and I agree.
But like, I feel like if you're going to bring someone back,
why put her in at breakfast? Why put her in at the round table?
Okay. That's it too. Like bring her in at breakfast and bring back someone better.
Yeah.
Was she super memorable on season one? Like, I don't really remember.
She's the most annoying one because she's the one who, like, she keeps calling out who she thinks the traitors are. Nobody believes her. So she starts, like, trying to throw challenges. She's throwing money away. She's just so over the top annoying. And it feels like she's playing it up for the camera a lot. I don't know why they brought her back. I mean, it even got to the point where Alan Cumming was like, he made some snide remark to her in season one when she was sitting at the breakfast table of like, what a great day for everybody except for Kate, because she was still in the game and clearly didn't want to be there. And so I'm kind of surprised they brought her back. Willie D says people loved Kate. Now, I didn't watch it live. I watched it a week before this premiered, but I just feel like production didn't seem like they loved Kate like because she didn't want to be there.
Yeah, it's tough. And we did our second chance to Survivor voting thing. If you haven't looked at that, we've been going through basically a new era tribe and an old school tribe. We're nominating people for second chances and the listeners and viewers can vote. And I have not been kind of in the fan community. Like I haven't been online or, you know, talking to you or getting that pulse from the fans on who's good. So I'm often surprised, like this person wasn't a fan favorite. People didn't like them, or wow, people love, like, I had no idea Carson was like the mm-hmm. all-star fan favorite, was surprising to me. And so this could be one of these things where we were not really paying attention as season one aired and Kate was like the all-star fan favorite queen. Yes. And if that's the case, then it does feel like, okay, it's planned. But yeah, to me, it feels weird. So yeah, as someone who wasn't tapped into all that.
Yeah. No, and we'll see how it ends up playing out with Kate, because I think if you're going to bring somebody in, they're very clearly going to be a faithful. I think it would be crazy if you brought them in as a traitor, because it's already so hard for the faithful to win. So I think it's so obvious that she's a faithful. So Kate really doesn't have any pressure on her. She won't have a target on her. Now, if I'm one of the traitors and you get an opportunity to recruit, I probably would recruit Kate at this point, because Kate is going to be somebody who's probably not going to have much of a target on their back. So she might be able to be like, look, I am a faithful. And I know for sure, because, you know, she could just play, like, lean into that and play that up. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Also, I guess I like players coming in. Like, I'm not against it for fairness, because we keep saying how this game is really difficult for the faithful. And so to give them, you know, more members, and that, so when a recruitment does happen, you're not getting totally screwed if you're bringing in Kate, and if you're bringing in someone else, that seems like there's a rumor going around. So I'm okay with it in this show, because you're not surviving the conditions doesn't really matter. Like, I get you have to survive the banishments and, you know, not get murdered, but to just come in late here, it's not like she has a total leg up. If anything, she has less information on, mm-hmm. you know, who to call out as a traitor or a faithful. So I'm totally okay with this, with helping out the
team. Yeah. Faithful. The Marshmallow Bear says, my only concern about Kate coming back is that she seemed to have been brought back to bring drama, which kind of feels like bad production BSery. And I don't disagree with that. She was very dramatic in the first season. And when she sat down, it really was, who do you think is a faithful? Who do you think is a traitor? Who do you think is a traitor? And she just started asking people directly, because she doesn't have the information, and people were actually answering. And this is where we got the really weak answer from Dan of, I think Janelle is one. It's like, you're giving everybody too easy of an answer on that. And since you know she's not, you almost need to go out of left field and be like, I think it's Phaedra. Like, he should have almost been like, I think it's Phaedra. And everybody go, why do you think it's Phaedra? And be like, because of this, I think she's throwing us off the scent. And like, just
throw, well, we're getting there, Phil. That's his only out right now. That's,
well, let's talk about the preview for next week.
Yeah, we're 30 minutes in almost.
We made it. So now, if you didn't watch the preview that closely, if you don't want to know this, we are going to talk about it right now. NBC Peacock, they spoiled their own show. That's their problem. Dan does go after Bergy and it doesn't work.
And we're sure about, I mean, that's because the two names were John or Bergy. It's felt like
the first clip of the next time on the traders, and it's I paused and looked at it, the round table, and everybody's sitting there, including Kate. So this couldn't have been from earlier in the season or something. Kate is sitting there, and it's all of the people who are still in the game, including John, including Bergie, including Trishelle, including Kevin. They're all there.
We're sure you counted too. There's not like this
13. I counted like five times, because then that was where I couldn't figure out how many people were left in the game and how many people weren't. And then I was like, but he said seven were banished, blah, blah, blah. And I had forgotten Deontay quit. And once you remove Deontay from the equation, they spoil that this
because
murder
I noticed it. I paused it too, obviously, because they zoom in on Dan making his plea, I'm finally going to give you a name.
And they show Bergie reacting right after that, and it's Bergie at the round table.
Yeah, and they zoom out and show the entire round table, and so I did pause, but for me, I didn't count like you. I was kind of like, let me just see. I looked quickly. Is Bergie there? Yes. Is John there? Yes. So, we end this episode with it either being John or Bergie. That's the question that we're given. And so for both of them to be there, you know, he went with Bergie, and Bergie has the shield. So let's talk about this, because they get into, their little huddle, and we do get the par Phaedra. We didn't really talk about that actually. The very top of the episode where Phaedra and Parv kind of hash things out. Parv's like, I was going for Larson, not for you. I had to say that to get it onto Larson. That was my goal. Phaedra kind of buys it. Phaedra's a team player, man. She's doing everything she can for the traders to win. But we get here a second time, and Parv's like, hey, Peter told me this. Dan's like, yeah, Peter told me that too. Parv's like, well, Dan, or he voted for you. So If he voted for you, he doesn't trust you. He has to be lying, right? And Dan goes, no, he can't be that savvy. Parv read this absolutely correctly. And what you do in these games, what's that?
I said it doesn't sound like her reading everything.
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly. She was like, and she said it so matter-of-factly too, like he's obviously lying. And something we talk about with these games, like Werewolf, Mafia, the Resistance especially. For those of you who don't know the Resistance, I'll just give a quick thing. You have, oftentimes, it's best with an odd number of people. So let's say there's five people. Three people are good. Two people are bad. The two people are bad know who each other are. The majority does not know who anybody is. And you send people on what are called missions. And missions, you can either play a fail card or a pass card anonymously. If there's one fail card, then the mission fails. And so you vote people to go onto these missions. And what's so great about Resistance is you look how people vote. And that's the information that you use in the game. If you are a faithful or a traitor, you have to look at people's voting history, because that's the only piece of tangible information you have. And so when I play the Resistance and I'm like, no, I don't want to send Phil on the mission. I think he's bad. I think he's a spy or whatever the terminology is for that game specifically. If everyone else votes, and then you go and you fail it or the mission fails, it's like, hey, I was the one who said no to this. And then if all five of you agree to send someone on a mission or to go, then you're like, guys, the two people who are bad, the two spies also voted for this. And so here it's like everyone goes for Janelle or everyone goes for Dan. It's like, we kind of know that honestly, Parv and Phaedra are going to get, if people are smart, they're like, who has been voting not for Dan? Like the people who voted for Dan are going to be the ones who can now gain all the trust, gain all the power going into the game. And that's why Parv was so smart to call this out. Dan, Peter voted for you. That's tangible information. If he thinks you're a traitor, he would not have told you the truth. And you have to use the votes to your advantage. And I think Parv was really smart on calling that out. And Dan just missed here. He just completely whiffed.
Yeah, I agree with you. And when I look at this, Parv and Phaedra, in my opinion, probably should have actually voted Dan out tonight or last night, because
toss a vote his way.
Yeah,
because you have to protect yourself. The people that are just lumping votes onto Janelle, like, I know there's more of those people, so there's a bigger place to hide. But eventually, if Dan does get caught, people are going to look who has been voting, just lumping in with majority the whole time. Oh, Parv and Phaedra have never voted for Dan this whole time, and they were just kept piling on.
And here's my thinking with this. I think Peter said he told Dan, he told Parv, and he told one other person. I forget who the other person.
CT.
If you're Dan, Parv told you that Peter told her, right? You have to throw Parvati under the bus at this next roundtable. And the reason is you find out about the shield, right? You know, Bergie is still in the game, so that must have worked. Like, whatever. There was no murder. Good for him. Bergie's alive. Parv revealed to you that Pete told her. So now you sit there at the round table and say, I think it's Parvati. And here's all the reasons why I think it's Parvati. And then you can say something along the lines, if you want to, of Parvati told me. Or maybe you can't say that outwards because Pete will be like, no, I told you.
Yeah.
But like, you can pin this onto Parvati because Parvati is somebody that should be on Pete's radar because Pete did tell her that he had found the shield and then it doesn't work. So I think that Dan's best bet isn't going after Phaedra. I think it's going after Parv. I think he has to go after Parv. Now, I don't know if there's enough heat on Parv right now to be able to figure this out. But if he gets them the vote for Parv, she will be a traitor and people will trust Dan. But I think what's going to happen is he's going to go after Parv. People are already so cautious of Dan that they're going to vote out Dan. Dan's going to be a traitor and Parv's going to come out looking like sunshine, rainbows, and ice cream. I mean, she's just going to be perfect because everybody's going to say, well, we finally got a traitor and he's coming after you, Parv. Like, poor Parv. Parv's going to come out of this looking really good if she survives this next vote.
Yeah, just everything we've seen from Dan, we've seen it early on developing, is that I want to keep the traitors together for a little bit, but when it comes time to cut ties, I want to cut Phaedra first and continue to work with Parv until the end of the game. He keeps saying, you need someone you can trust as a traitor. You need someone you can really bounce ideas off of, and you got to be cutthroat. Like, I want Parv for all these things to get all the way to the end, and that Phaedra maybe doesn't bring that, and that he could, I don't know, he's told us that he wants to go after Phaedra. So that's why I lean Phaedra more, especially because Phaedra, I think, is probably less willing to like go after a traitor. She seems to be such a team player. So if Dan starts throwing Parv under the bus, I don't think Dan can rely on Phaedra to be like, hey, it's you and me. It's Phaedra and Dan. We're the team. We're going to go after Parv. Whereas I think Parv and Dan have already had conversations that we've seen where they're like, eventually we have to turn on Phaedra. And I think that's where they're going to have to go.
I do think, though, because of the beginning of this episode, because of how quickly it went away, I do think that it's kind of lost that Phaedra and Parv had any type of beef. And, you know, Phaedra said, I forgive, I give grace. You know, she said all of those, you know, those good sound bites. But I do think that if Dan were to get rid of Parv and make it look like, wow, she was the traitor, now we got to find the other traitors, I think Phaedra and Dan going into that last thing, Phaedra would be like, I didn't really like Parvati anyway. This is fine with me. But now you better watch yourself, because if you do that same thing to me, I'll blow your game up. I will tell them everything. And I think Dan would be receptive to that for sure.
Yeah, I'm also curious what the traitors are allowed to say. I mean, we saw traitors subtly go against each other last season, but it was more like the faithful kind of were really onto it. It became very obvious. So then the traitors could kind of just dogpile and be like, hey, you know, you already have the votes to go home. I don't want to out myself and by defending you. But I don't think we saw, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think we saw traitors like really go after each other at all last season, where they're like calling each other out, putting people's name at the forefront that haven't even come up yet. And I know when they take this oath that you're not allowed to reveal who other traitors are, but you have to be able to.
You can talk like, about it.
Yeah, you can be like, I think it's Phaedra, and I know this because we meet every night, and I'm a traitor.
It's like, yeah, I because mean, otherwise, it's too easy, because like it would just be, oh, well, Will has never brought up Phil's name, so they both must be traitors because they're not allowed to bring each other's names up. Like,
no, yeah, you have to be able to play.
Yeah, you can. Cody went home last year, and that was when Ceri voted for Cody at that vote, and he was a traitor. But Ceri wasn't sitting there beforehand being like, Cody, it's Cody, it's Cody, it's Cody. She just sat there, voted out Cody with everybody, and was like, Cody, I just think you're probably a traitor. And that's what really ended up getting her the driving force to win the game.
Right. And I'm kind of wondering now, Matt, maybe this is why they don't tell them how many traitors there exactly are. Well, no, I still feel like the faithful should have information, but let's say they know there's three. It's like, you get one of them, you'll feel great. you'll feel awesome, but it won't, like, if you know there's three and then Dan, let's say, puts it on to Phaedra, just example, you could just be, you, that might not even cover Dan. Might be like, next week, well, hey, we still know there's at least two more here, and they might have recruited. And Dan might have known, and that's why he got away with it. So maybe it is better for them to be like, huh, maybe there's only two. and they haven't done recruitment yet. They're going to go two and then go to three. Some people think there's four. I remember Janelle mentioning, like, I think there's four. So maybe
there were more people on this season, which is what I think was driving that thinking.
Yeah. I go back and forth on it. I think if they know, it helps. I think it also helps that one of them was recruited and that they know that production didn't select all three of them. Mm-hmm. So that there's like two people that definitely, I don't know, that you kind of use that as a clue. And then the third's like a complete wild card. So I do like that. I don't know. I will have to see how it plays out.
So we were talking about the trust, and I kept talking about how I like the concept of the trust more than the execution for sure. But I kind of like the concept of the trust early on more than I like the concept of the traders. And one of the reasons was it's all a level playing field. What do you think about this whole thing of, well, one of them has to be a guy, so let's just keep voting for guys. Or one of them has to be a woman, so let's just keep voting for a woman. Do you think that that's a flaw in the game, or do you think that that's just like an easy, logical reason to do it? Because why not just vote out every single man until you find one and then just turn your attention to the women?
Yeah, I think that's fine. This show just hasn't been on long enough for us to see all possible iterations. So, I mean, you could see season three, it's two women and they get to recruit somebody and they recruit a woman, and you have three. It could be two guys and they recruit another guy. Like, the longer the show goes on and we see all these possibilities, and this includes traders winning together, traders winning solely like Sari did, faithful winning, maybe one faithful figures out how to win. Like, if we just see enough iterations, it becomes way more difficult to game like that. Mm-hmm. So I think that's just that will naturally go away the more iterations we see, because everyone now just has one thing to base it on. Like, oh, we saw Sari and we saw whatever his name, Christian. Two men. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, now this season they probably did two women and one man. And but yeah, I think that does go away after a few seasons.
Yeah, I agree. And I think
it's a flaw. I don't think it's an inherent flaw.
I think it's a benefit to playing one of the first two seasons of the show, is that you're kind of going to know, okay, they're going to have women, they're going to have men. I think the next season, it wouldn't be shocking at all if production just picked three women right off the bat, because, you know, you're never going to say, oh, well, I'm just going to take off all the women because it's going to be three women in a row. Like, you're going to think to yourself, okay, we got two women, now let's turn our attention to the men. And that one woman trader is going to be sitting there going, oh, okay, that's nice. So I just wanted to see what you thought of that, because that seems to be the biggest logic the faithfuls other than Pete have come up with at this point, is, well, somebody has to, it has to be a man, and it's not Bergie, it's not Pete, it's not
CT. Well, and so many men have gone home. That's the thing. So they're like, they're looking around. They're like, well, if there is a man, like, we can whittle this down, like, between CT and Dan, essentially. Like, Peter and Bergie have no doubt on themselves at all. I think Bergie would actually be a great person to recruit
at this point. Yeah. Bergie's,
if he can keep it in, maybe
really
he
good at the end of the
maybe
seven.
he'll turn, though. I mean, that's the whole thing with recruitment. Like, your people are going to notice your change in personality. If you're letting it on that you're a traitor, if you're providing those tells, people will absolutely notice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. And I think at the end of this episode, when Bergie showed his emotion a little bit, I don't think in anybody's mind Bergie is a traitor. I think everybody thinks Bergie's a faithful. So if you do get the opportunity to recruit, he's the perfect person to recruit at this point. Mm-hmm. And like, how would Bergie's emotions and stuff change if that happened?
Do you think we're getting a recruitment, or is it going to be, I mean, honestly, I think a traitor is going home next week. I don't see how
I think Dan is going home. I think Dan is done. I think it's too much of a last ditch effort to try to get rid of Parv or Phaedra in this.
Yeah. Episode. But which is crazy, though, because Phaedra and Parv both didn't say anything tonight. So it's like, it's so weird. I mean, maybe they did and we didn't see it, but it's like, we're being told this story that if you don't put up a name enough, that you're going to draw that heat on you. And then we're also being shown Parv and Phaedra saying complete zilch. Like, did either one of them say anything besides voting? I don't think so.
What we're not seeing with Parv and Phaedra is, I think when everybody's having conversations, not at the round table, I think Parv and Phaedra are willing to discuss who it could be. And I think that's something Dan is not doing. Dan isn't sitting there with other people saying, you know what? I think you're right. It probably is Sheree. Like, it probably is. Let's vote for her. And as I squint, because that's what Parv does every episode. But I don't think Dan is doing that. And I think Dan is literally just sitting there listening. And he's like that weird guy at the party where everybody's sitting there talking about some sporting event. He won't add to the conversation. So you change the subject thinking he'll jump in, and he still doesn't jump in. And you start to be like, what's wrong with this guy?
And Bergie and Peter have called Dan out. Like, if I were a traitor, I'd be doing what you're doing. That's, I would not give out a name. I wouldn't feel compelled to. You feel like you have some sort of safety because you can't get murdered every night. And you know, you can vote whoever you want for banishment. So they are, yeah, they're totally onto him. It's that balance, man. It's that balance. You got to toss out some names, but you can't be so aggressive and over the top as we've seen with Janelle and Larsa the past two banishments.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And like Larsa and Janelle kind of did it to themselves here. Like they put a big target on their back. Dan is putting a target on his back, but Janelle's was just bigger. And just because Janelle wasn't a, I think it was perfectly stated. I think it was CT who said it or somebody said it, but it was, if you're not a traitor, you're a terrible faithful and I don't want to play the game with you.
Right.
And that's the thing. Like you can be like Janelle standing up there being like, I told you so. I was a faithful. It's like, yeah, we really don't care because you were so bad at being a faithful. We could not play the game with you.
Yeah. You'd go for shields every time that you could. Yeah. So you're not adding money to the pot. You're throwing so many targets out that like you're going to miss, like you're not getting the traitor in your crosshairs. Yeah.
And you might just randomly throw my name out, and now all of a sudden I'm on the block and I haven't done anything. I don't know what you're doing. I don't know what your strategy is. You're too much of a shotgun.
Yeah. What do you think about Kevin? Kevin was catching some heat too. And do you think Dan tries to throw any heat at Kevin and keep the traitors alive? I just don't think there's any value in it.
So Thomas McGee said, what do you all think about Kevin and Kate's exchange at the round table? So we can kind of talk about that too. And like my thing is with this interaction, I don't really care like who's rude to who. Like I think on this type of TV show, like are we going to then sit there and say Sandra was rude to Janelle? No, of course you're not going to say that. I think that like whenever you try to make these arguments of who's rude to who, it's just kind of like what's your preference? If you think Kevin was rude to Kate, you have to think that Sandra was also rude to Janelle, and you can't just be like, wow, that was great TV. You have to say, no, it was rude. So when I look at Kevin and Kate's exchange at the round table, it doesn't really bother me. Plus Kate's coming in without any information and Kevin's kind of in the hot seat. So he's trying to defend himself. And now he's getting questions from this person he doesn't even know or comments. And I mean, look, Kate was pissing everybody off in season one. So like, I don't know what she said or what was edited, whatever. That being said, I don't think Kevin's good enough of a target to go after in this situation. I think if you're Dan, if you put a name out there, it has to be a traitor when they go home. It absolutely has to, because if you say Kevin and everybody votes Kevin and Kevin's a faithful, you're done. You're absolutely done. So yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah. His whole story and theory, like that he's telling everyone, I'm only going to put a name in when I'm 100% sure, which is such a weird thing to do anyway. Like, why can't you just have a conversation like, hey, I saw some weird stuff going on with Kevin and John, he's a politician. Like you can toss out kind of little things, but he's like, no, I'm only going to do it when I know. And so, yeah, it's got to be Parv or Phaedra. And you're on the Parv side. I'm on the Phaedra side just because everything we've seen that Parv and Dan seem like more of a duo that can work together moving forward. So even though it might not be as convincing to the faithful, I think if he does stick around that he's going to want Parv on his team, basically. He's like saying, if I survive this, it has to be with Parv because me and Phaedra aren't going to find a way to work together until the end.
Let me ask you this, though. If he goes after Phaedra and starts throwing Phaedra's name out there, I don't think he gets the votes. And the reason is a lot of Bravo Housewives type material. Like, I don't think MJ is going to vote for Phaedra. I don't think Sheree is going to vote for Phaedra. I don't think Trishelle is going to vote for Phaedra, even though she's a challenge person. Like,
but the seeds have been planted. Like, and this might be some Parv and Dan conversations that we're not seeing, but like, I know Parv's like, no, I was trying to get Larsa. That's why I said the housewife. The housewife thing is still out there. Like, there were four of them, and we just lost one, right? We lost Larsa. How many housewives do we have left?
Let me look up the cast real quick.
Oh, but Tamara,
we lost Larsa, and we lost
Tamara went home. Tamara. So there's only two of them left. And so if you're Dan and you're like, hey, we know it's a housewife. I've been watching everybody. It's Phaedra.
What did you think about the elimination of Tamara, though? Do you think that helps Phaedra, or do you think that hurts her because now there's one less housewife to be concerned about? Or do you think it's like, well, why would a housewife take out a housewife?
We kind of talked about this last week. It's tricky because it's exactly that. Now you're only one of two housewives, but would a housewife eliminate another housewife? I don't know. They're housewives. They're devious. They could just be doing that for cover. I think it's like kind of a neutral move because you get the benefit, but you also get the con. Like, oh, it couldn't be Phaedra because why would Phaedra send Tamara home? But then it's also like, wait, it has to be Phaedra or MJ. Or no, not MJ. Who's the other one left? Cherie?
It's Sheree, yeah.
Sheree or Cherie and...
MJ's a Jaws of Sunset person. But so there's three of those types of like non-competition women on this season left.
Right. And I think if we are going to Housewife, there's only two of them left. So that's why I think Dan does have some ground to stand on with this, where he could actually rally the votes and put it on Phaedra. And we've just heard this plan from him. And I'm not saying it's going to work, because I think you're right. I think you could probably sway people that Parvati is a traitor more than you could Phaedra. But the seeds are out there. Like there is growing this vibe, this idea has been just sprawling out that it has to be a housewife, that if there are three or four traitors and there's four housewives on the show, like the odds are one of them is one.
Yeah, exactly. And now, see, that's where it's tough, right? Because I thought it was the right move for Phaedra to get rid of Tamara here, because the housewives were coming under fire. And I think you do that, and it kind of like, it says to you, okay, so it must be one of the competition people. And if you're Phaedra, you'd rather be the last remaining traitor than have to split it three ways anyway. So good. Let Dan and Parv take a little bit of the heat here and then worry about everything after. But now all of a sudden you start hitting the point of, uh-oh. And it's kind of the same reason why I don't think they wanted to go Sandra, why Parv probably pushed against Sandra, even though we didn't see this, is, well, if Sandra goes, everybody's going to look at me and say, if one of the queens of Survivor is a traitor, it's me. Like, because Sandra is gone. Sandra's a great shield for Parv right now. Because Sandra, the way she plays, how subtle she is, how loud she can be, is somebody that you would suspect to be a traitor. I mean, she's considered one of the top two greatest Survivor players of all time. So, like, why would you want to get rid of her? And I think Phaedra's running into that problem a little bit of like, okay, Sheree needs to stick around. Because if Sheree goes, everybody's going to look at me and say, we started with four housewives. There's no way none of you were on here.
I think Sandra, I mean, if you are the traitors and you need to, like, you want to throw another Faithful's name under the bus, I do think as it would be for Parv's game, like, Sandra seems like a great candidate just because she had this big spat with Janelle. And then we saw that Janelle was clearly a Faithful and that Sandra is a villain, and that it would make sense for production to select her, and that she's playing, you know, she plays these games. Everyone knows Sandra's an infamous two-time Survivor winner. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, if you're Parv, you don't want this, as you just spelled out. But that could be a name that that we're not really paying attention to right now, because everyone fights with Janelle, it looks like. But I think CT and Sandra, with their public spats with Janelle, and that she ended up being a Faithful, I think the traitors could use that in the future should they not go after each other.
Yeah, no, I do agree. And it's kind of like Sandra's personality is to spat with everybody. And I think a lot of the housewives aren't going to look at what Sandra and Janelle just did as like, oh my God, that's so rare. It's like, that's what a lot of these people do on their shows anyway. So I think Sandra's got a little bit of a pass, because Sandra also said her whole plan this season is to buddy up with the housewives. So if she's buddying up with the housewives, and then she has a spat with Janelle, who everybody's pissed at anyway, most people were going to have that same type of spat with Janelle.
Yeah, but she voted out Larsa. See, that's the, like, if you keep voting out the Faithfuls and you are in the majority and you keep being incorrect, because that's what Parv, Dan, and Phaedra have all done is just vote incorrectly with the majority every single time. Like, if you were to look at like a grid of votes, there's probably very few people that there's maybe one or two others. And that's how, I mean, if I were playing this game, that's how I would narrow it down. Who's been in the majority every single time, and we keep getting it wrong. Yeah. Those are the people you got to go for.
Yeah, like, who's stupid and who knows what they're doing? And some of these people know what they're doing. Like,
it's like, no, it's like you kind of want to find, like, who's throwing a random stray vote. I think actually Parv did it once. She did throw a stray vote. So good for Parv. She wouldn't be in this grid. Maybe we can look maybe we can tweet that out. We can look at the voting history and figure out who has been, you know, in the majority every single time. But, yeah, like Bergie and Kat, like those people, the people who are misfiring, probably not them.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless they're really good. Like,
no, you unless they, like, are really good.
Yeah. Unless they're really, really good. And right now, Pete, I think, is shocking everybody with how well he is playing. I think he's doing a really good job. I can look this up right now. I mean, Parv's voting history, just so you know, Peppermint, Kevin, she voted Kevin.
Yeah, I remember the stray Kevin vote.
Yep, and then Larsa and Janelle, so she did do that. Dan went Peppermint, Max, Larsa, Janelle, so he's been voting with everybody every time. And Phaedra went Peppermint, Ekin, Sue, Kevin, Janelle. So Phaedra's voted wrong.
So Phaedra threw the stray vote. Very smart on her.
Mm-hmm.
Who else? Can we look at other people's voting history?
Yeah, I have them all. I mean, Bergie went Peppermint, Max, Larsa, Dan. So Bergie's been right until this last one. CT has been right every time. Dan has been right every time.
CT is someone that the faithful should actually look at. They should be like, CT, you're voting incorrectly every time. Yeah.
And especially at that Max vote, there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people who got votes. And CT happened to be one of the people who voted for Max. And then you have John went Peppermint, Max, Kevin, Dan. So he's starting to kind of like show that he's not really in this as much as everybody thinks. Kevin went Peppermint, Peter, Larsa, Janelle. So he was wrong on the Max vote.
Mm-hmm.
MJ went John on the first vote, one of the only people to not vote for Peppermint, and then went Dan, Kevin, Janelle. So she threw the really random Dan vote at the early second one.
Yeah.
She just wanted to do that for the sake of kind of doing it. Peter, Peppermint, Kevin, MJ, Dan. He's only voted correctly once, which maybe is part of his strategy too, is to be like, look, I'm not even voting the right way. Because Marshmallow Barry even said, remember Kevin and Peter had that weird plan to vote for each other, which they did do. So Sandra, Peppermint, Max, Larsa, Janelle. So she's been right every time. Sheree.
Sandra has been. See, Sandra and CT, and I think maybe that's why
people are looking at
that's
them.
That's why people are looking at them. People
yeah, because Sheree was Peppermint, Janelle, John, and Janelle, and then Trishelle was Peppermint, Max, Larsa, and Dan. So it's really Sandra and CT.
Sandra, CT, and Dan are the only three people who have been. So it's like those are the people who are, and that's who Janelle called out as the three people. So
yep.
I mean, she's using her game sense. She's played these games before. So
yep, 100%, 100%. Do you have anything else you want to talk about with this episode, or do you want to kind of just move on, move off, and we'll be back next week?
I think we've covered pretty much everything. I'm trying to think. Like I said, I like the challenge, man. I know you don't like the birds. I dig the silliness, especially when they're in this castle. And it's like last week we had a funeral procession and it was all dark and grim. And this is just like so absurd. People running around with toy birds and going, caw, caw, and like trying to mimic noises. So I love the information that was hidden with the shields. I don't think that was planned. Did you think that was a planned idea from the show that, hey, let's give out shields, but people won't know? Because it just seems so weird that after every challenge so far, announced it. Well, Alan announced it, though.
I think it was planned, though, because I think what they're trying to do is I think they want it to be a little bit more secretive for the.
I know, but I feel like that came from the players. I feel like.
I'm just saying, I don't think Alan and stuff. When Alan asked them, shields were found, does anybody want to say who it is? They literally say, no, but we don't.
Hasn't it been that Alan has explicitly announced it?
But everybody has seen it happen in all the other challenges. He hasn't even had to announce it because everybody has seen everybody get the shields. If you remember how these other challenges played out, everybody was either going for a shield or going a different route.
I don't know. But even like the scarecrow thing, it's like you have all these scarecrows and you're looking at the front or the back. And I was saying, to make this really explicit, you should put a scarecrow field and a shield field. And then I forget what they're collecting, bags of money, let's say. And that the fact they were in the same, like it was either the front or back, the scarecrow, it's like, you couldn't really tell who was doing what. So it's like, if I get a shield, you're looking where the money is. So I could just take the shield, hide it away. But Alan, I think, was calling it out. Like when people found shields, you could have easily hidden that in the scarecrow challenge. With the way they set that up, you could have found a shield and not told anybody. But it seemed like the show was like, let's recap the challenge. Here are the people that got shields. And it was very explicit. Whereas here, I think it was the players, Peter being like, hey, we have this plan.
Also,
he starts telling everybody, and then the production has to come in and be like, yo, Alan, do not reveal anything. Let's ask, does anyone want to share? And when they say no, that's a great moment. That's great strategy, great story, all of that. Because why haven't they been doing this earlier?
Though, in this one, the fact that they didn't tell the people in the house specifically where the shields were going to be and things like that, like maybe that was part of the idea of like, we split you up. So now figure it out.
I just don't know why in the scarecrow. Maybe
they're actually starting to think like in a good way.
Yeah. I just don't know why in the scarecrow thing, especially because you put them in the same place that you could easily pretend you were looking for money, swipe a shield from the butt of the scarecrow and walk away. I'll have to watch that again and we can maybe revisit that next week and I'll just see like, hey, were they Were they really trying to call people out? That's what it felt like to me. It's like, why don't do this? Oh, this works so well. It works so well when this is hidden information.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what ends up happening next week. If you haven't listened to our previous recaps of the traders, go ahead and check them out. They're all over here on YouTube and audio and Spotify, iTunes. If you're listening, we do have a whole YouTube channel that you can subscribe to. Like this video if you haven't liked it yet. I know we have a pretty good amount of people watching, so go ahead and like the video. That helps us keep building our traders coverage. I mean, a lot of people are interested in this and invested, and it's great that we have a second show to Survivor now, because it seems like this has a lot of crossover and people.
Yeah, really, I'm glad the trust was so awesome as it was.
Yeah. If you want to listen to our trust recaps, go ahead. We don't recommend watching the finale, but go ahead and listen to our recaps. If you have an hour to waste, throw it on.
I still think the trust is a very interesting show, and I don't think it ends with fireworks, but I think there was enough to talk about there. And we had a great time breaking down all episodes of that show, the format. It's a really funky idea. And, you know, we got some really good episodes out of it. The ending wasn't like incredible by any means. Maybe it was kind of a letdown, but, you know, we get to then talk about why that happened, ways to fix it, all that fun stuff. So,
yeah. And then the Phil and Will show, we talked all about the Lions versus 49ers this week, the Phil and Will Bowl, as we have dubbed it. I'm not wearing Lions stuff. I only have like two shirts of Lions stuff because I stopped buying all the crap because they've been bad for so long. But we talked about that
here at the Wazoo.
Yeah, we talk about that. We talk about the Ravens versus the Chiefs, and we talk about Baseball Hall of Fame and what a disaster that has been. And on Sunday at noon Eastern time, we are going to be doing the final episode, at least of our nominations, and then we'll get into the reveals. But we'll be doing our final episode of nominations for Survivor Second Chances, and we're going to be looking at pre-40 women. So seasons 1 through 39, female players who've only played once, who we want to nominate for Second Chances. So tune into that one on Sunday at noon. That's going to be a lot of fun. Thank you all so much for listening to our traders coverage. Like I said, like the video, subscribe to the channel. If you're listening on Spotify, on iTunes, Apple Music, whatever it is, give us 5-star ratings, leave us reviews, whatever you got to do. That's going to help us keep building. And we love bringing this content to all of you. And hopefully we just keep expanding. So thank you so much. And we'll see you next time.
See ya.